Each year here at Highlands United Methodist Church, we celebrate something called the Season of Creation. This is a liturgical season, meaning a movement of the Christian year that was founded in Australia as an effort to help our congregations throughout the world take a moment to step back and appreciate the sacredness of creation and God's call for us to tend to it. This year, our Season of Creation invites us to consider the waters. Now, Season of Creation really has become a part of our summer rhythm. It fits so beautifully into the outdoors of Colorado that we would turn our attention to the created world around us. Having just completed Pride Month, a month of celebrating God's love for all people, we now turn to the way that love is expressed through the very gift of our planet. We take these weeks to reconnect ourselves to an important truth. Our planet is a gift entrusted to our care. This gift requires our best efforts. This gift requires efforts that are driven by a spiritual reality. And I name it that way with intention, a spiritual reality, because there are countless places you can encounter statistics and information about water levels or drinkability or drought impact, human rights. There are many places these conversations are happening. And all of those are very important parts of this conversation, and we are invited to have them with a perspective you will not find in many other places. We are invited to engage these essential and important conversations with a spiritual lens, because it is a sacred thing to care for creation. These conversations belong in our sanctuaries, in our Bible studies, and in our prayers as people of faith. Now, in the weeks to come, we will consider the symbolism of water in our religious traditions. Oh, there is so much to consider and celebrate. It'll be a beautiful conversation. As well as in the weeks to come, we will reflect on our responsibility to care not only for water, but people's right to access it. Oh, there are so many conversations. It will be a challenging and enlightening conversation. But in order to fully plumb the depths of these conversations, we must have an appreciation. We must have a sense of wonder about water itself. For it to carry meaning, it must matter to us. So today it is my hope to capture your imagination at all that water is and all that water can be. And so let's start at the beginning. In the beginning, if you will, hear these words from Genesis. When God began to create the heavens and the earth was without shape or form, and it was dark over the deep sea. And God's wind swept over the waters. God said, "Let there be light." And so light appeared. God saw how good the light was. God separated the light from the darkness, naming the light day and the darkness night. And there was evening, and there was morning, a first day. And God said, "Let there be a dome in the middle of the waters to separate the waters from each other." God made the dome and separated the waters under the dome from the waters below the dome. And so it happened in that way. And God named the dome sky. And there was evening and there was morning, a second day. And God said, "Let the waters under the sky come together into one place that dry land might appear." And that is what happened. God named the dry land earth. And he named the gathered waters seas. And God saw how good it was. Now, we're going to skip ahead a few days, but trust me, God creates things and says they're good. And then God creates humanity, and we find these words later in the chapter. So God created humanity in God's own image. In the very divine image, humanity was created. And God blessed them. And God said to them, "Be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth and tend to it." Here in the opening words of our scripture story, the words that reflect the oldest memory of life, we are reminded that water is life. The waters, we are reminded, are where life began. For where does God begin to create? The Spirit of the divine hovers over the waters of the deep. And though we skipped over the days of the animals, where's that very first animal life created? In the waters, from the waters is where life comes. And when God creates humanity, they are placed in a garden that is where? At the confluence of the rivers of life. Life being found at the river is a very true and historical piece. Throughout humanity's existence, water has meant life, and thus we have stayed very close to it. Before piped irrigation allowed us to overpopulate arid deserts, you could plot out humanity's existence, the villages and the cities on a map, and they would trace for you the rivers, the lakes, the shorelines. People gathered at the water. Water is life in such a way that we do not even know how life could exist without it. You see, as we reach towards the stars and investigate other planets and celestial bodies, water is one of the very first things we look for. For though our history is tied to water, so is our future. One of my favorite scientists reflected this. On Earth, water is a key component of life because it dissolves nearly everything. Meaning the materials that are necessary for life can easily be carried into our cells and waste can be carried out. Every biological function that is happening inside of our body at every cellular level is made possible because of the water that flows in who we are. Water is life because water lets life happen. Other fluids do not accomplish this feat. They don't allow the process of life to occur in the same way. Not only is water life in that way, water is also unlike nearly every other substance we know, and that water expands as it gets colder. Everything else we encounter in this life gets smaller and tighter and denser as it gets cold. But not water. While it does contract for a brief while as it chills, something nearly inexplicable happens at 4 degrees Celsius. When water reaches 4 degrees Celsius, it suddenly expands, lessening its density. Because of this, ice floats. Other things, as they get cold, get dense and would sink, but not water. Now, when we're sitting and drinking a tall glass of ice water, this may not seem like much as the cubes float around, clinking the glass, occasionally falling into our face if we tip the cup too far. But when you consider the global implications, if ice were to become dense, all ice would sink to the bottom of the ocean, crushing and killing all life beneath it, going to a place where it is so cold it would never unfreeze, new ice falling upon it and upon it, raising our sea levels and forever encasing the globe in an icy underwater crust. This doesn't happen because of something we cannot explain about water. Suddenly, the molecular oddity of water becomes quite captivating. Now, I share these seemingly random insights with you because for all of our scientific understanding, there is a point where no one can explain why water is so perfect for life to exist. It just is. And it's worth wondering about. And I use the word wondering with intention because we as people seem to have lost our ability to wonder. To be in awe as we wonder about the world around us. Not just the world around us, but the world within us. Water is 60% of what you physically are. Water is also 71% of the Earth's surface. It is everything. It is life, because life as we know it requires water. Now, water is also at risk. In Chennai, India, right now, government officials are trucking in water to a city of 9 million people. It is happening today because the water sources for that city have run dry. Their efforts are meeting maybe 50% of the need. That means that either 4.5 million people are not getting what they need, 9 million people are getting half of what they need, or most likely some combination of the two. Here in the United States, water conservation efforts are actually struggling to stay in people's minds because we just happen to have a rather wet year nationally. And suddenly, after a few drops of precipitation, suddenly decades of drought blow from our memory like dust in the wind, and we're no longer paying attention. But even in this temporary state of enough, there are still access and quality issues disproportionately affecting Black, Indigenous, and people of color, as well as people of lower socioeconomic status. These are also things worth wondering about. Now, we will engage the specifics of these realities with more detail, but before we can, we must hold and honor a place in our lives for water so we understand why it matters. Because I tell you, water is holding a place for us. I want you to join me in a little imaginative exercise, because it is easy to forget. When we turn on the tap and we get a glass of water and we drink it, we forget all that has come before. So we're going to join a program already in progress. I'm going to ask you, and you're welcome to close your eyes and imagine with me, unless you're going to fall asleep, at which point someone will elbow you if you snore. But I want you to journey with me back 83.5 million years ago. Again, program already in process. The world has been happening for quite some time, yet here we are, 83.5 million years ago, as a Triceratops lumbers its way across a grassy field. And as that discovery in Highlands Ranch recently reminds us, it wouldn't have been a field too far away. So this Triceratops is lumbering its way across a field, and as it gets tired, it lets out a sigh in the early morning. And a cloud, familiar to those of us who have exhaled on a cool day, it would be familiar, this cloud that escapes its little beak-shaped mouth. Leaving its mouth is moisture from the plants it had just eaten, escaping into the morning air. That moisture makes its way into the clouds that are traversing the planet. None of the continents in the places we would recognize them now, but the clouds traveling and moving across this earth now contain the water from that Triceratops' breath. It joins a cloud and falls as snow on the top of Mount Everest. It lays there snow upon snow, turning into a sheet of ice, eventually joining a glacier, shaping and forming the earth below it. Eventually, that same little drop of water is a part of a berg that breaks off and begins to float and sojourn across the oceans. Eventually, on a sunny day, it's freed from the ice and once again makes its way into the atmosphere, where that same little drop of water falls and joins a river that begins to shape the Grand Canyon. As it moves through these cycles upon cycles upon cycles, it is sailed on by indigenous people and explorers alike. It makes its way to a small pond where it's played in by a platypus. It becomes the tears of a child who is scared in the middle of night by a clap of thunder. That same water could eventually sit in a glass on a table, as Thomas Jefferson writes words we still aspire to live into, quenching his thirst in his work. That same water, from dino to mountain to ocean to parched lips, has grown tree after tree, flower after flower, greeting day after day. In the courses of rivers and streams and tributaries, it has run mile after mile, never tiring. In its darker moments, that same water has flooded homes. In its brighter moments, it has projected countless rainbows into the sky. And in the quiet and still days, it has rested gently upon a blade of grass as fresh morning dew. That same drop of water has baptized countless children, including children in this very congregation. Water that may have made its way through the very river Jesus was baptized in fills our bowl and drips upon the foreheads of our children. I tell you, for all of our physical impermanence, our here today, gone tomorrow physical bodies, the water upon which the divine spirit hovered at creation is still among us. It is within us. It is around us. it is really worth wondering about. For water is life. Amen.